Well, welcome to another episode. I'm Jay Connor, your host, also known as the Private Money Authority, coming to you from Morehead City, North Carolina. I'm so excited to have you guys here for another show. Wow, we are launching into our fifth year of the show, and I really appreciate the subscribes, the likes, the ratings, all that kind of good stuff. And I'm going to ask you, when you find this show beneficial to you, I'm going to ask you to just share it with one person. So if you've been tuning in, you for sure know I have amazing guests. Join me here on the show. And today is another amazing show. My guest, she trains and she teaches entrepreneurs and investors at what is called the Residential Assisted Living Academy. Now, she's responsible for the creation and the success of the Residential Living Academies, the National Convention and the National Association and the Recovery Housing Academy. I mean, my guest is a creator, and if there's anything that you would want to know and learn about investing in and knowing about residential assisted living, then you are tuned into the right show today. Well, she's got a background in business, marketing, and communication. She was an intern as well at Walt Disney World, and she's worked for two Fortune 500 companies. And so without a doubt, you're going to learn here in just a minute how much of a true leader that she actually is in business development and in operations. She is named and has been named the future leader in the senior housing industry and the top senior housing influencer, all under the age of 30 years old. Now, her goal is to carry on her father's legacy by training investors and entrepreneurs on how to, quote unquote, do good and do well. And with that, it's my pleasure to introduce to the show, Isabel Guarino-Smith. Isabel, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. That's a beautiful introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, it's easy to do a beautiful introduction when you've got good material to work with.
There you go.
You've got quite the story, Isabel. So I know you and I are connected by fellow mastermind member. And so it's great to have you here on the show for the very first time. We want to hear all about real estate assisted living and all that. But first, tell us your background story. How it is you got into real estate, and how did this journey start for you?
Yeah. So, like many families in America or all across the world, you know, we all have an elderly loved one in our life, right? At some point, some way, somehow. So for us, it was my grandmother and my dad's mom. She fell, broke her hip, needed care, needed home care, assisted living. So we searched and searched for a place for her to live. We thought this was just part of life. You do this. We kind of stumbled into residential assisted living, which is not big box style, Brookdale, Sunrise, Atrium. Instead, it's a residential home, a single family home that houses anywhere from 6 to 16 seniors. They're still getting the same quality of care, medication management, you know, food, everything that they need, but it's run a little bit differently because it's a single family home. And my father was a real estate investor his whole life. So he kind of jumped in with 2 feet, purchased the home, purchased the business, and we got started in this industry. Since then, we have purchased 3 of these homes, invested in thousands across the country, and we started teaching other entrepreneurs and investors how to own and operate their very own assisted living homes, maybe for the needs of their own loved ones or just to cash flow really well.
Interesting. Well, and that makes a lot of sense because you've got your own personal experience with your own family member that got involved in this. In fact, I've got 2 other friends that they started out in single family houses like I'm still in, and they migrated to residential living because of that very same thing. It was a personal family member that had like a bad experience in a traditional assisted living, facility, and you know, migrated over to this type of, you know, business model. So take us down the journey and tell us the story of the very first house that you got and how you got it converted into residential living. And I want to hear that story about that first home that I assume that you used for your family member, right?
Yes. Well, she passed before we could move her in, but she was the reason why and how we got started in this journey. But that was an existing RAL business. So it was up and running. And when I use that acronym RAL, it's residential assisted living, for those of you who are listening. So that business was already running. So we purchased the real estate and the business, right? And it was, it already had seniors in it. It was already licensed. There was already staff working in the home. We just took it over, made some improvements to it, got it to cash flow even more. The way we run them is very hands-off. So that way of getting into the industry, purchasing and existing, is kind of one of the fastest, and you could call it one of the easiest, because they've already done the hard work for you, right? You're paying for the work that someone else has done, getting it up and running. So you can kind of jump in right away and just get started with it. Another way we got involved was buying a single family home and converting it to become. So just a regular single family home. It's about 5,000, a little over 5,000, maybe 5,200 square feet. It was a 5-bedroom, 6-bath home. We converted it to become a 10-bedroom, 9-bath home, because in Arizona, we're allowed to have 10 residents in a home. So that most people want private bedrooms, private bathrooms. So we converted it, did that renovations to it, got our licensing, hired our staff, and then filled it with residents. So those are kind of two different ways you can get involved. The other one that our students do is building custom homes from the ground up, especially if you live somewhere like our student Brad, who's out in Kansas, right, where there's still land to purchase. This might be a good option that you do, where you buy land, build a custom home ground up, and go about that process. As well as the fourth way to get involved is leasing a home. So if someone has already retrofit the home and got it licensed and ready to go, and you're going to lease the property from them to operate the business. So those are kind of the four ways you could get involved. We've personally done three of the four. We haven't built one from the ground up, but only because land isn't that accessible here where we are. But in certain states, our students love that option.
So just to make sure I understand, tell me, what is your definition of assisted living? Obviously, it means someone needs assistance to live. I get that. But specifically, what is assisted living? What kind of services? I'll let you answer that the way you want to, and then I'll dig a little deeper.
Yeah. So residential assisted living is just a group home for seniors that need help with activities of daily living. So by the time you need to move into one of these homes, you're not moving in there for fun, right? You're moving in there because a doctor usually ordered it, or you literally have to. You cannot live alone anymore because you need help with bathing, getting up out of bed, going to bed, right? Brushing your hair, brushing your teeth, taking medications, eating, moving in general. Usually most seniors need help with 3 to 5 activities of daily living by the time they move into an assisted living home. In the home, right, you've got your licensed administrator who's running all of the day-to-day operations, your licensed caregivers who are caring for your residents, 24/7 care, medication management, 3 meals a day. You might have a private chef in the home. We've got activities going on. So it's a full, robust home, but instead of a family with 2 kids and a dog living in the house, right? It's maybe 6 to 16 seniors living in this home, getting help with their daily care needs.
How's it different from a nursing home?
A nursing home is medical, right? So that's doctors, gurneys, IVs, right? So we're not medical. So there's really only 2 ways you're leaving an assisted living home. One, you're passing on to the next life, or 2, you need medical care, which would be you're going to a nursing home or a nursing facility.
Gotcha. So are there different levels of care in a residential assisted living home? Or, I mean, does a family pay the same price regardless of the different levels of service, or do they pay more or less depending on the services that they do receive?
Great question. There's not necessarily levels within the residential assisted living home, but in the grand scheme of assisted living, there's levels, right? So independent living or Golden Girl style would be kind of the lowest level. You need help with landscaping, changing a light bulb, very minor things, right? But you can pretty much move and groove on your own. So that's independent living or Golden Girl style. Then assisted living, which is what we're focused on, where you need help with 3 to 5 activities of daily living. You really shouldn't be living alone. You know, you need that 24/7 care. And then nursing home facilities. The only caveat with assisted living that we're kind of missing, and it's not necessarily another level, it's just another opportunity, is a memory care home. So, you know, most seniors, well, even me, I deal with memory care issues all the time, right? We all do. But most seniors are dealing with some level of memory care issue. So you can have an assisted living facility and or home that's focused on dementia care needs, Alzheimer's, or memory care. They usually, the residents have to pay more for those types of homes, because your caregivers have to have a higher licensure level, as well as the home or facility has to have different physical requirements on it, special locks and things of that nature, to make sure it's super safe for those seniors. So that's kind of the levels. But the second part of the question you asked was, are people paying, you know, different ranges based on their level of care? And absolutely is the answer. So when you come to move into an assisted living home, they do an assessment with you. So it's based on your level of care needs, right? Are you up at night? Are you a two-person assist, right? Or are you moving and grooving really on your own? You just have, you forget things every once in a while. Like, what is the level of care needed for you? That will determine your base rate, if it's going up or down. And then also the base rate will be affected by which bedroom or room in the physical house you have. Is it the master with the master bath, or is it a shared room with a shared bath? So those different factors will determine how much you're paying for your care needs.
Gotcha. So if someone needs help making sure they take the right medicine at the right time, that's one level of care versus, you know, I just need help with my mobility and getting around. And then I really started hearing about residential assisted living within just the past few years. I'm sure it's been around a long time, but I really started hearing about it more often, like within the last 5, 6, 7 years. Prior to it becoming a popular option for seniors, what did seniors do prior to residential assisted living?
Yeah, it's really crazy, because definitely I agree with you. Over the last couple of years, we're even seeing, being in this industry for 10 years, you know, we're seeing more and more things popping up and it becoming really being brought to the forefront. Tyler Perry just launched a TV show called Assisted Living, right? Jimmy Buffett's opening Margaritaville themed retirement communities. Like, celebrities are getting involved in this industry because they see the silver tsunami. They see what is about to come. The supply is going to completely outweigh, or sorry, the demand is going to completely outweigh the supply, right? We do not have enough beds. We're about 1.3 million beds short for assisted living needs. And it's only going to get worse over the next 20 years as the influx of baby boomers come into the market and they need this home care and assistance. So, you know, these homes have existed for a long time. There's 30,000 of them across the country today. So they've been here. They're just really run mom and pop style. So we kind of came in the industry and said, we're not going to be running these like mom and pop. We're going to run them like professional owners, to give families an alternative option to just a big box facility, a Brookdale, a Sunrise, an Atrium. You know, that's what you think of when it's like, don't put me into a home. You're thinking of that big facility, put some barbed wire on the top. It looks like a jail, right? It feels like a jail. We didn't grow up in hospital-like environments. Why would we want to age in them? Why would we want to live in them in the last years, in our last golden years of life, right? Most of us grew up in a home and would like to continue to live in a home until we pass. So really the options as you or a loved one ages are a big box facility, right? In-home care, which right now the current rates are about I think it's $27 an hour. So if you need 24/7 care, 27 times 24 times 30, it's about 19 grand a month. Most regular Americans can't afford that. So that's not really an option. And then they say, well, don't worry, I'll take care of mom or dad while on nights and weekends. I just need someone to come watch them while I'm at work. And that is an option, but it's still about $4,000 a month. And then you just gave up your nights and weekends. Say goodbye to book club or church or going to your kid's soccer game, like no more, right? So in-home care is expensive and it still is putting a lot of labor on the adult children or the family members to help supplement. The only other option is residential assisted living. And to me, it's kind of the best of both worlds, especially for your listeners who are already real estate investors. They can just add this to their portfolio as something where they could live or a loved one could live for free and they could be cash flowing in the meantime.
That makes a lot of sense. That's interesting that there's 30,000 of these homes nationwide, you say, at this point in time. And you already answered one of my questions, and that is, what's the demand going to be in the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years with all these baby boomers coming along? And my guess is there's going to be a shortage of supply, which means, and this is really a question, but it sounds as though since there's going to be a shortage of supply, well, supply and demand has a lot to do with what driving what prices are. So I would imagine what families are going to be paying in the near future for a loved one to move into one of these homes, I would anticipate prices are going to be going up, 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 up as far as what will be charged because of supply and demand.
I 100% agree. The national average right now to live in a home is $4,500 a month. And it's already gone up 79% over the last 10 years. There's 10,000 people a day turning 65 and 4,000 people a day turning 85. But at the peak, there's going to be 11,500 people turning 85 every single day. So there is going to be a massive influx of need. And not to mention, right, a lot of the wealth is held in that generation. So a lot of people are like, oh, this transfer of wealth that's coming, let's all get excited about it. Let's be real. The transfer of wealth is not going to go from one generation to another. It's going to go from one generation to the care home. And whatever's left over is going to go to the next generation because it's going to be extremely expensive to be able to afford this. So to me, it's like get in both of these pots so you can take advantage of that. It's a crisis or an opportunity. It depends what role, you know, you choose to play in it.
Yeah. What does a, and I know this is going to vary from market to market and state to state. So I know it's a broader question. So you're allowed to give me a broad answer. So like, what's the return on investment look like in this, you know, opportunity from the standpoint of a real estate investor?
Okay. So let's just go basic numbers. Well, wait, I want to explain something because now too many things are coming to my mind. There's a couple ways you could get involved as a real estate investor. One, you could own the real estate and lease it to someone who's going to do this business, right? If you do that, you could be getting twice the fair market rent, a long-term low impact tenant with little or no maintenance. So if you just want to own the real estate, that's a great option and lease it to someone who's going to do this. That one, you know, it's twice the fair market rent. So that will range by your area, right? The second way is owning and operating the home. That's what we do and what we teach most of our students to do. So in that example, right, you're going to own the real estate, right? And so let's just use the national average. If we have $4,500 a month times our 10 residents, that's $45,000 a month coming in. If our expenses are right around $28,000 a month and the debt service on the house is about, let's just say $5,000 a month, that's leaving us with just about $10,000 a month in cash flow or $120,000 a year in cash flow on one REL home. We just used average numbers, $4,500 a month. So really, you know, if your market, if you're in a more expensive market, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Washington, California, some rates are crazy. Kansas is super high for some reason. But if you're in a market where you have higher rates. That $4,500 is not what a lot of our students are charging. They're charging $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a month per resident, and their bottom line is looking a lot nicer than just $10,000 a month. So that's another option, owning and operating the home. And then the third is, if you just want to be a private lender or JV partner, you don't want to own any of the real estate, you don't want to be in the day-to-day and operate the business whatsoever, then you can lend on these projects and, you know, usually be getting maybe 12% plus a couple points, or however you set that up with the person you're working with, you know.
Right. Well, you just led me into a perfect segue right there, Isabel. I was going to ask you, in a lot of cases, how do these projects and homes get funded? Obviously, private money and private lending is a big way. So if you will indulge me for about 20 seconds, I got a free gift to give away to everyone. And that is, you know, private money is my niche. And I've been borrowing private money since 2011, funding all my deals with it. And so if you are a real estate investor, or you're a wholesaler, or you're a seasoned real estate investor, you're interested in raising money for any of your real estate projects, you're interested in getting to real estate assisted living, like Isabel is talking about, it doesn't matter the real estate. I just finished writing this fantastic money guide, which is called 7 Reasons Why Private Money Will Skyrocket Your Real Estate Business and Help You in Build Incredible Wealth. You can download it for free at www.jayconner.com/money-guide. That's Jay Conner with an E-R, jayconner.com/money-guide. This will get you plugged into private money very, very quickly, to where you've got the cash ready to available to invest in any of your deals whatsoever. Download the guide after the show and don't miss out on that. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Isabel, of private money really fitting into this scenario. And I would imagine you train your students as well on how to get the funding for these projects.
We do. And I love that you offered that guide. Grab that guide, everyone who's listening, because I think that that pairs so perfectly with everything we're talking about here. Of course, you can go to the bank or get an SBA loan or do these other options, but to me, private money is always the best money. There's so many people right now who are getting less than 0% on their money who would love an opportunity to invest in someone like you, you know? So listeners, go grab his book. I'm going to grab it because it's really, really, really important. And that's the absolute best way that you can work with someone on this, you know?
Yeah. And to be clear, you know, Isabel, you and I are talking about private money. We're not talking about hard money. We're not talking about short-term money, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. We're talking about private money that there's no rush, you know, to pay it back. In fact, all these private lenders in the money guide I just mentioned, it teaches you, walks you through. Where do you find these people? Where do you find these private lenders? So we go all into that. Who knows, Isabel? Perhaps I should have you at one of my events, and I should come to one of your events. And
I think
you
can, so.
You can teach a real estate assisted living, and I'll teach them how to get all the money for their deals. Anyway,
I love it.
Anyway, we digress. So, do you advise to get the money lined up first before you start deciding that I want to? Am I going to buy an existing, you know, RAL? Am I going to take a house and convert it? I mean, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, the deal or the money?
I know that's such a tough one, because I always like to say, be open to opportunities, because even with those 4 options I mentioned of how you could get involved, if you target yourself down and say, I'm only going to do this one option, well, what if one of the other options pops up and now you're not open to it and it passes you by? And so I always say, like, be open to opportunities. Be putting your feelers out there for how you want to get involved. You should start to have your money lined up. When students come to our training, the first thing we tell them to do is get that business plan ready so you can get in front of the investors, even before you find the property, because you're probably going to have already narrowed in on an area that you want to be. So you can create that business plan and you can get started working and researching that area, finding out all the rules and regs there and kind of determining where you want to be. And then when that money comes, you're ready to go with that business plan, ready to have that conversation. You're educated. You're not oh, what am I doing? I don't know what's going on. You've got to be open to opportunities, but you've got to be prepared. So I think it kind of all happens in tandem, but I wouldn't, you don't want to get locked in on a deal and you don't have any money. You know, you need to already be kind of fishing over there and making stuff happen so that when an opportunity comes, you can make moves quickly. Successful people make decisions quickly. And when your head and your heart are in the same state and they want the same things, it's easy to make decisions quickly. When you're confused and you don't know what's going on, things get a little blurry, right? So it's important to kind of make sure that you have all that laid out and that you're ready to go and take action, because opportunity, it comes and it goes, and you've got to be ready to take action.
Absolutely. Isabel, I've got a couple more questions before we wrap up. But before we get to my final questions, let's go ahead and share how people can get in contact with you, learn more about your real estate investing training. I think you've got a free gift give away. So let me turn that over to you.
You got it. We host 3-day trainings in Phoenix, Arizona, about 8 times a year. When you go to our website, residentialassistedlivingacademy.com/training, you can learn more about that if you're already ready to rock and roll and take action. But for those of you who just want to gather some more information, RAL 101 is a great place to go for a free book, a free webinar. You can schedule a call so you can chat with me or anyone on our team, and we'd love to get connected with you in that way. So RAL 101 to download that free book and grab all the freebies that you want.
That's awesome. Thank you for offering that, Isabel. So Isabel, what is the best advice that you could give right now on someone that's interested in getting started in real estate assisted living investing?
Ooh, I love this. You know, to me, I feel like time is of the essence, especially in our industry. If this is something that's piquing your interest right now and you're saying, wow, that sounds cool, like I think I could do that, or man, my family needs that, don't wait. You need to start now, because more and more people, every single day that passes, someone new is getting involved and interested in this industry. And I want to set you up for the max amount of success, whatever your exit plan might be. It might be like my father. He passed in October, and you know, we built all these businesses together. He left me 3 cash flowing businesses. That's incredible. What an absolute blessing. And we can show you how to do that for your children. Or you might want to get 100 of these homes, package them up and sell them to the hedge funds. Whatever your exit plan is, we can help you with that. But if this is at all of interest to you, don't hesitate. This isn't something to wait on. It's something to jump on now, because the opportunity is coming, and the more people that get involved, right? I want everyone to get involved, but the more people that get involved, the less opportunity you have to kind of grab that market and say, this is my area. We're the best in this area. Our reputation is stellar. You know, we have the best staff, whatever the case may be. So I would say time is of the essence.
Be sure and take advantage of Isabel's free gifts and free training and free book at www.ral101.com. That's ral101.com. Isabel, just a couple more questions. There's all kinds of ways people can get involved in real estate investing, single family houses, multifamily. Of course, this is an example of commercial, you know, self-storage, land. It just goes on and on and on and on. What would you name as are the top benefits or reasons that this asset class has, say, over some of the other asset classes that people can get involved with?
Ooh, that is a wonderful question. Something I've been really shouting out on our social media, because I think a lot of people who want to do residential assisted living are also in like single family home rentals or Airbnb. So one of the major things that I always like to point out in comparison to single family rentals is to cash flow $10,000 a month on one home. That's not going to happen with a single family rental. You're going to need maybe 10 doors, maybe 20 doors. So you're dealing with 20 plus properties, 20 plus tenants, right? Who are all signing 1, maybe 2-year leases with you. These people are signing 5-year leases with you, 10-year leases with you. It's completely different. So the cash flow is night and day in comparison from one home to one home, right? When it comes to single family rentals, you're going to have a lot more doors to compare. When it comes to Airbnb, my biggest like differentiation between the two and why I always lean residential assisted living is that with Airbnb right now in our world, money is getting tight, right? People are pulling back. They're saying inflation, recession, I don't know what's going on. They're not taking that vacation. They're kind of watching their money tighter because everything, the cost of everything's going up. So Airbnb to me is a luxury investment. It's something that you go and rent this home in La Jolla with your family of 10 to go have a fun time, and you're willing to spend $20,000 for that week on this Airbnb, right? Or you're traveling and that's why you need it and you're using it. Well, the rules and regs on those are going up. The hoteliers are getting involved in them. Marriott just opened a bunch of Airbnbs across the country. You're never going to be able to outbeat a big boy in the game like that, right? So that to me is a luxury thing. Residential assisted living, you don't stop paying for mom or dad's care and house if money gets tight. Unless you're going to quit your job and take care of your mom or dad full time, you don't just stop paying for this. It's not a luxury item. It's a necessity item. So when we look at the status of the world and we say, things are getting tight, I want to invest in something that's going to be recession resistant. Nothing's recession proof, but as resistant as possible, residential assisted living is a necessity. It's a need. It's not something you just give up or say, oh, we can't afford it. I don't know what we're going to do with mom. We can't afford it. It's not a vacation you can just cancel, right? So to me, it's night and day. There's a lot of opportunity and reasons why it outbeats many other single family options.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure my next question, you and your team answer and teach at your live training, but give us a little hint. How do you find these houses and homes that are big enough to convert into 5 rooms, 6 rooms, 10 rooms? I live here in a small area and I don't see many houses around here that could house that many people, but I'm sure you've got the answer.
Yes, 300 to 500 square feet per person is a good rule of thumb. So if you're going to have 10 residents, minimum a 3,000 square foot home, right? Upwards of 5,000 is pretty comfortable. You're really not going to find a 10 bedroom, 10 bath house unless you're in the most luxurious market in your area, right? Like my neighborhood personally, when I look right across the street, those are multi-million dollar mansions and they have 9-10 bedrooms, right? And most of these properties that we own are over $1 million, right? This isn't when you think single family, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, you're going in the luxury market. You're going a lot more upscale, right? Because people aren't going to pay $7,000-$9,000 a month to put their mom or dad in a regular home. They're going to put them in a mansion for that, right? They want the bang for their buck. So think definitely bigger, more luxurious in a more high-end market. That's kind of what you want to go after. And then also you're just going to retrofit the home to make it work, right? So a 3,000 square foot home could definitely be in a normal single family neighborhood, but it's about how you're making the bedrooms and bathrooms and chopping it up and doing that renovation to make it flow nicely while still having that living room, that dining room, that kitchen, maybe an office, maybe a hair salon, a movie theater, whatever other features you want to add into the home.
That certainly makes a lot of sense. Well, Isabel, we're at to the point of the show to where I ask you to share your parting comments.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun and I hope all the listeners learned a lot. Our company's motto is to do good and do well. So I just want to share that with you guys. Making money is a lot of fun, but impacting people, creating jobs, creating businesses, and making a big impact on your family and your community is a lot more important. So do good and do well.
That's awesome. Isabel Guarino Smith, thank you so much for joining me right here on the show. And I wish you all the best. And who knows, you might be seeing me at one of your upcoming events.
I love it. Let's make it happen.
All right. Well, there you have it. Another amazing show. So excited to be a part of it. And wow, what a guest we had today. I'm Jay Connor, the Private Money Authority. Again, I'm going to ask for your help. And that is share this episode with just one person in your market that you think it would make a difference. Like, share, subscribe. If you're watching us on YouTube right now, be sure and click or ring that bell so you don't miss out on any future episodes. I look forward to seeing you right here on the next show. Thank you.